The following video is not intended for entertainment. It's not a documentary, report, or television program. Rather, this is an attempt to approach an explosive scientific topic in a cinematic way that is as objective and respectful as possible. We deliberately avoid staging of scenes, as we've no intention of causing emotion in the viewer. We would like to convey factual, verifiable information. In addition, we hereby call on all viewers to question the contents of this video and not simply to believe any information presented here. Doubt, be critical, and check everything. Only that is scientific. Emmanuel Project, On Related Issues. With this video, we introduce you to the first in our series of extra videos that we'll publish in addition to our regular program. On Related Issues focuses on pressing questions, theories and theses that are making the rounds in the public sphere and to which we would like to respond as promptly as possible. Most importantly, topics are discussed that are only marginally dealt with or not dealt with at all in the main series of our project. Number 1. Bioweapons, the myth of man-made pathogens. Biological warfare is a thoroughly complex subject. The use of biological weapons is probably as old as humanity itself. All kinds of animals or naturally occurring toxins can be used as weapons to either attack enemies directly or in some way to make it difficult for them to survive. Throughout history, humans have been devising all kinds of biological warfare that have been as effective as they have been cruel. Time and again, there have been reports about the use of supposed pathogens. As early as the Middle Ages and even in antiquity, allegedly transmissible diseases were claimed to be a popular means of warfare. For instance, corpses of dead humans and animals were hurled into cities with the intention to cause epidemics in these areas. Such stories do have a kernel of truth. Hurling decaying cadavers at enemies was certainly a proven biological weapon, but it had nothing to do with pathogens. These days, when people hear the term bioweapons, they usually think of artificial pathogens from the laboratory. Bacteria and viruses that are either genetically modified or even created in their entirety. In the 21st century, such ideas are more topical than ever due to the alleged progress in genetics and an equally assumed improved understanding of biology. Horror scenarios, wild rumours and theories, as well as adventurous novels, feature films, series and video games on this subject are a dime a dozen. But what has actually been researched and developed with regard to artificial pathogens? Is it possible that something could really be brewed up in bioweapon laboratories that could prove dangerous to humans? No, it's not possible. I mean, you can see now that fear is the best bioweapon there is. You simply show some photos of coffins and corpses. That's the most powerful bioweapon we have, misinformation. But the most dangerous thing, of course, is the superstition associated with it. People generally believe in the concept of dangerous viruses. Scientists also believe in them, and those working in related fields are proud that they are working on something so dangerous and important. They don't see that they are being completely unscientific by not questioning the concepts in which they believe. And it is the very first written duty of every scientist to constantly question their own findings and assumptions. Nowadays, however, we are dealing with a reversal of science. Those who point out obvious contradictions are berated. This is really the reversal of all science.
der Wissenschaftlichkeit.
Science is important and can contribute a lot to humanity if it's applied with integrity. But what is happening here is pseudoscience. In his 1956 book, Sociology, Volume 1, Eugen Rosenstock-Huessy explains why people engage in pseudoscience. He shows that because of how science now operates, we can no longer make new discoveries. As if science had been derived from Greek criminal law, what we observe, we judge and explain exclusively on the basis of what we already know. And of course, only material explanations are permitted. We do not want to know about any other explanations. We then say, they cannot be true, they are unscientific, wrong and dangerous. Rosenstock-Huessy clearly demonstrates that we can no longer make any developments in this way. We cannot discover anything new with our unscientific approach. And it's a typically human characteristic that no one likes to see their achievements and findings being thrown overboard. Rosenstock-Huessy also shows this. He demonstrates how these unscientific principles permeate academic life and how pseudo-research is then carried out in order to somehow maintain these very principles, the model to which people adhere. For example, by doing animal experiments without any control experiments, or killing cells in a test tube also without any control experiments, and then simply claiming that the result of these experiments had to come about because of some virus. That's how easy it is, and we must not forget that this was already written in 1956. In his book, Healing Power and Truth, Concordance of Political and Cosmic Time, what a title, he describes how mountains of corpses, such as in genocides, can quickly pile up again if one misses the moment to recognize and correct mistakes. Wrong decisions are made. Wars escalate or whatever. This is the challenge we are facing right now, to recognize these mistakes in time. So it's very important to deal with these things, and bioweapons is a very good example of these things. The Russians, for example, completely abandoned their bioweapons development in the 1970s because they realized that the concept of pathogens as weapons does not work. But the claim that dangerous bioweapons exist is very effective in order to create fear. First and foremost, of course, it's effective in populations who are panic-stricken about contagion. For example, historically, the Israelis managed to empty the entire Palestinian refugee camps without firing a single shot. They simply claimed, the wells are contaminated and soon the dangerous disease will break out here. Nothing happened at all, no shots were fired, and voila, the Palestinians were gone. That was the starting point of Israel, an act of fear. The Israeli population also has one of the highest cancer rates in Western societies. Certainly not in all parts of the country, but in many, people live in constant fear of death. There is a constant fear of terrorism, of rockets, of bombs. Of course, such an attitude to life is anything but conducive to good health. Didn't the Nazis in the Third Reich also have a biological weapons program? What happened to it? Was it abandoned? The reason they never seriously worked on a bioweapons program is because nothing had ever worked in that direction. What they did was try to protect themselves from alleged germs. In this regard, I recommend reading the book by Ludwig Fleck, Genesis and Development of a Scientific Fact. There are also many articles by him on the internet. Ludwig Fleck was a bacteriologist, and he was deported to Buchenwald concentration camp, where he was forced to develop a vaccine for the SS. He wrote that he and his colleagues knew that all the assumptions about supposedly dangerous, disease-causing bacteria were completely wrong. He knew that things don't work like that this idea is just a misinterpretation. Anyone can read that for themselves. You can find a lot of material by and about Ludwig Fleck freely accessible on the internet. Nevertheless, Ludwig Fleck and his colleagues had the task of developing a vaccine against a supposedly dangerous bacterium for the SS. And they knew that if they tried to explain to them that it wouldn't work, they'd get their heads chopped off. So they just made a vaccine for them, as demanded. They let something or other decompose, added a few bacteria, and when the whole thing was bubbling away in the test tube, the poisonous mixture was filtered, formaldehyde was added, and that was it. The vaccine was injected and the job was done. That's what he describes. And he also describes how science actually operates, because he himself has experienced these undesirable developments and seen how they come about. After the Second World War, the Americans were of the opinion that the National Socialists, the Nazis, might have used some kind of secret drugs to take the soldiers' will away so that they would happily go to war. The Americans were investigating this to try to address the big problem that many of their soldiers, who were supposed to bomb Korea, deserted. Hardly any of the soldiers at that time had ever held a rifle, seen a tank, or had anything to do with weapons and the military, and suddenly they were supposed to drop bombs on another country. Some biologists even suggested that the Russians had bred a socialist virus that could be used to render the American soldiers willless. Such speculation really did exist, but of course it led nowhere. What the USA did in the end, however, was to experiment with all the drugs that were available. This project, about which a great deal of information has come to light, was called MKUltra. People were tortured and subjected to drugs to take away their will in order to program them. And this project existed solely because it was believed that at least some, if not all, of the German soldiers must have been given some kind of secret drug.
Also, wenn man sich das anschaut, was hier läuft, und es ist erschreckend, ja, wie immer noch da mit Angst gemacht wird, ja.
It is frightening that even today, speculation about bioweapons is used to scare people. And here is another example. The virologist Professor Zhang from Shanghai had received the order from Beijing to search for a coronavirus in bats that was harmless to humans and could then be used as a template for the so-called sequence alignment. He was under extreme time pressure because the panic of the people in Wuhan had to be brought under control. It was feared that the people there might storm the hospitals at some point because anyone who had any kind of complaint, such as asthma, cough or fever, immediately panicked and imagined that they had SARS. Something like that can endanger public order very quickly. And it was going in that direction, triggered by the ophthalmologist, Li Wenliang, whose own fear spread very quickly via social media. That's precisely why Professor Zhang was given the task of producing a harmless bat virus as quickly as possible. It was already established that the few dozen cases of pneumonia that existed at that time had not infected anyone else. From the beginning of December, when the first cases were tracked, until the 20th of January, no one was infected, no one else got pneumonia. So they assumed that if anything at all, it must be a virus that was difficult to transmit and could probably only be transmitted from animals to humans. So they looked for a virus in animals. Then Professor Zhang from the Fan Wu et al. Research group, whose results were published in Nature, the first work on the so-called new coronavirus, created the genome strand of SARS-CoV-2 in the absolute record time of only 40 hours. He got the fluid from a lung wash, obtained some nucleic acid out of the fluid, sequenced it, and then ran the puzzle called sequence alignment. But he didn't have time to apply all the rules of virology. That's why the genome from these 40 hours of record time looks more than bumpy. Normally one takes at least 3 weeks for this process, and then a genome sequence appears really polished.
Und da hat keine Zeit gehabt, die ganzen Regeln der Virologie. Ja, dieses Gen hat jetzt eine besondere Auffälligkeit hier. Hier gibt es ein Lesemuster, ein Leseraster, das beginnt hier und so. Und in diesen 40 Stunden.
But anyone who knows a bit about biochemistry can see that the genome of SARS-CoV-2 really does look very bumpy. And this is exactly the argument of the people who claim that the virus must have come from a laboratory and must therefore be a bioweapon. Of course, this then circulates on the internet again and fuels people's primal fear of infection and of viruses. Therefore, anyone who claims such a thing has to be asked the question, where has a virus ever been isolated? Where? Show me a relevant publication and show me the exact passages in which this is described. Show me where this is described in the methods section of any scientific paper. These are only very short paragraphs, and if it cannot be shown, it must be rejected, because it spreads unnecessary and dangerous fear.
sowas behauptet, ja, ernsthaft, dem kann man die Frage stellen, ja, wo ist denn überhaupt ein Virus isoliert? Wo? Zeig mir doch irgendeine Publikation und mach das jetzt. Und wenn du diese Publikation nicht herzeigen kannst und mir die Textstellen drin anstreichst, wo die Isolation konkret beschrieben ist, ja, hier, in diesem Methodenteil, ja, das sind ja ganz kurze Absätze, ja, dann muss man den zurückweisen, weil er macht unzulässige und gefährliche Angst. Angst ist immer gefährlich, Angst ist nicht rechtfertigbar, in diesem ganzen Bereich nicht. Und so ist es einfach die Theorie natürlich, ja, dass es Krankheitserreger gibt und dass man das natürlich übertragen könnte, ja, wird so in die heutige Zeit fortgesetzt. Aufgrund dieser Behauptung geht man aber ins Detail.
Fear is always dangerous. Ja. Spreading fear is not justifiable.
Dazu zu sagen ist,
the theory that there are pathogens and transmissible diseases has been perpetuated to the present day with this kind of assertion. But if you go into detail, you immediately see that none of this is tenable. What one could say perhaps at this point is what was done again and again in the so-called Middle Ages, or actually in all wars, is to make survival impossible for the enemy and also for the civilian population by destroying the crops, destroying the fields, killing the animals so that simply scorched earth remains, and by throwing carcasses into the wells. Then the water was heavily polluted with decomposing products of the proteins, that is, with nitrates. Every mother understands that. If a bottle of mineral water says it contains more than 50 milligrams of nitrates, no child is allowed to drink it, because otherwise it would turn blue. And if a child were to drink this water all the time, he would get the type of buboes that were called the plague in the Middle Ages. From 1981 onwards, it was called immune deficiency in homosexuals, or GRID, gay-related immune deficiency for short. And from 1983 onwards, it was called AIDS. It's as simple as that. It's massive poisoning from nitrates in drinking water. It has nothing to do with pathogens producing any disease toxins. Such toxins are produced when something decomposes, i.e. the proteins break down and turn into putrefaction. It is quite clear that it is not healthy to drink water with corpse poisons or to eat rotten food. Already at the beginning of the corona crisis, rumours circulated very quickly that the alleged new coronavirus was not of natural origin, but came from a bioweapons laboratory. Of course, China was first accused of having developed the virus. Later, the USA was accused, and then China again. And at some point in between, the French scientist Luc Montagnier, who was awarded the Nobel Prize in 2008 for the alleged proof of the HIV virus, among others, spoke out. He claimed that the virus was definitely of artificial origin because it had genetic similarities to the alleged HIV virus. Most of these theories were dismissed after some time, and many scientists declared that there was no reason to assume that the alleged SARS-CoV-2 was a bioweapon. In January 2021, however, the rumour of the Wuhan virus flared up again, when an international group of researchers claimed to have found new evidence that strengthened the suspicion of the bioweapon. The scientists' conclusions sounded alarming, but were also based only on suspected elements in the alleged genetic strand of SARS-CoV-2. These observations immediately lose their significance, and above all, their threatening nature, when one realises that this same genetic genome strand of the alleged SARS-CoV-2 is in any case only a man-made theoretical construct. No wonder, then, that some of it looks artificial and man-made. One could say SARS-CoV-2 did indeed originate in a laboratory in Wuhan, but not in the way many people believe. The genetic material of SARS-CoV-2 comes from a computer and has never left it. It is a theoretical mental construct. The ideas of pathogens made in laboratories are all scientifically untenable. Moreover, they even contradict principles of biology that have been known for many, many years. It's irrelevant whether they're supposed to be killer bacteria or killer viruses. The terrorist attack in the USA in 2001, with allegedly genetically modified anthrax pathogens is just as unlikely as the Wuhan virus of 2020. To understand why biological weapons in the form of pathogens have never existed in this way and never will, one must know the following. With regard to viruses, disease-causing viruses, i.e. a dangerous genetic substance, are to this day nothing more than mere theory. No scientist in the whole world has ever succeeded in providing tangible proof of such a virus. Even if one or the other has ever been awarded the Nobel Prize for alleged proof, their work never stands up to scientific scrutiny. So how do you make an artificial virus when you can't even find a natural one? The topic of viruses is dealt with in detail in the main program of Emmanuel Project. With regard to bacteria, bacteria cannot make organisms sick in the sense that we believe they can, and they are not the parasites they are made out to be. Bacteria, which are always found in our bodies, can, under certain circumstances, be involved in ailments, some of which can even be life-threatening, but that does not mean that they are parasites and harm us in that sense. Moreover, bacteria in living bodies either produce no toxins at all, or only in such small amounts that it's impossible to become ill from them. One must bear in mind the conditions under which alcohol and cadaveric toxins are produced. So how do you grow killer bacteria? By reversing their biology? That would really be a scientific sensation. The complex topic of bacteria is not dealt with in our main program, but we will return to it in one or two special formats. Conclusion. There are a variety of possible biological weapons, however, pathogens are definitely not one of them. All claims about genetically modified or even artificially created pathogens contradict biological principles and are therefore inevitably doomed to failure. There may well still be stray scientists in the world who aim to produce the ultimate killer microbe in their laboratory, but they will fail just like the people who tried to make gold in earlier times. Their scientific basis is simply incorrect, in both the case of the alleged viruses and bacteria. All allegations, speculations, rumours and accusations revolving around artificial pathogens therefore only generate fear and enemy images, and we definitely do not need either. There is already more than enough fear and hatred, especially in this time of corona. Prolonged fear can lead to serious health problems, particularly for people who already have respiratory difficulties. Rather than creating more fear with unfounded claims of killer viruses from a lab, we should stick to verifiable facts. Then all open questions about the alleged Wuhan virus, its latest mutation, its similarity to HIV, and other theories about bioweapons and killer viruses will take care of themselves. In order to complete the control experiments on SARS-CoV-2, we are still urgently looking for bioinformaticians to repeat and document the original sequence alignment. If you are a bioinformatician, are proficient in the de novo alignment on viruses, and have an opportunity to access the raw sequence data from Fan Wu and his colleagues, please get in touch at fragen@wplus-verlag.de.